Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Coming at you live and direct, pop-up show. Short notice. You know, we just decided to hop on tonight and decided to talk about a couple things going on in the MMA world. A lot happened in the last couple of days, man. We had Nate news. Then we had more Nate news come out today or late last night. We had Conor press conference saying that he's coming back January 18th, but the UFC hasn't confirmed or denied it, so we got to see how that shakes out. We had Damian Maia submit Ben Askren this morning in Singapore. Got a lot going on. This week we had Macy Barber and Paige VanZant going at it on social media. And then Macy attacked her again on the Ariel Helwani show. So there's a lot to talk about in the UFC world. It's a good time to be a UFC fan, to be honest. Yo, what's up, bro?
Yo, this is crazy right now. This is really crazy right now. I feel like I haven't been on here in too long, so this feels crazy to be on the air. I'm very happy about this. I'm stoked about this. Glad to be here, bro.
Yeah, man, me too. I was just telling the people, we had a lot of stuff going on the past couple of days. We had Nate testing with elevated levels, and then to come back and fight his own. Then we had Damian Maia submit Ben Askren. Then we had the Macy Barber Paige VanZant drama this week. Then we had Conor McGregor press conference in Russia, where he said he's going to return to the ring January 18th. But I think we should start here with our conversation tonight. We'll go ahead and get this out the way before we get to the juicy stuff. I know that today on our group chat, you brought up the fact that people are kind of like shortchanging Ben Askren, you know, as far as him not being good, the UFC should cut him, stuff like that. And I came back and I said that I think people just holding on to the original stance of the UFC saying they would never bring him to the UFC because of his fighting style. They, you know, it's been quoted that Dana White said he's a boring fighter. So, you know, me personally, you can attest to this, always felt that the UFC should have kept DJ. How can you let one of the greatest mixed martial artists in the world just go, you know, just leave your organization? So, but at the same time, you know, Askren, I think he's still fairly young. I think he has time to maybe add to his game, because as of now, everybody knows what he's going to do. He's going to try to wrestle you to death. And if he can't wrestle you to death, what else can he do? So I think right now it's safe to say the guy's a one-trick pony, Keys. You agree or disagree?
Yeah, so, no, he is. You know, he's just a wrestler. But, you know, I remember when we did a show before they did the deal, the trade, and, you know, before it even announced that they did the trade, we did a show leading up, you know, I don't even know how when exactly it was, but I remember the conversation, and you didn't know really who Ben Askren was, or you did, but you didn't, like, you never had watched, like, any of his footage or anything like that, or really known, like, his track record, things like that. And you asked me, because I had, you know, mentioned him on Twitter a handful of times before people, anyone really knew who he was, because I was paying attention to his, what he was doing in, over at ONE Championship, and I'd watched, you know, some of his fight replays on YouTube and things like that. And, you know, when he was TKOing guys and you know, beating champions and things like that, and it was pretty dominant, you would ask me, you know, what is he like? And I had said that he was kind of like similar to a Khabib style fighter, but only I said he was like Khabib, but in the ONE Championship. And I guess now I still think he is, but it's just that I don't think he has the same, Khabib has a different kind of pressure than Ben Askren does. I think Ben Askren, or at least the way it seemed, is that he, you know, he, at least for in the Maya fight, what I had seen is that he did seem to have a hard time holding Maya down when he was taking him down. It didn't seem like he was having a problem getting takedowns. He was just having a problem keeping him down, as where Khabib doesn't really have a problem keeping guys down. Once he gets you down, you're pretty much staying there till the end of the round, at least, or unless you get finished. But yeah, I would agree. He's a one trick pony. He's just a wrestler. And but the reason why I brought that story up is because that was more or less what I said going in, is that, you know, I never really described him or believed that he was like a multifaceted individual. He wasn't like a John Jones, where like he can do pretty much a little bit of everything and do a little bit of everything well. So I never saw him as that kind of guy. He was just dominant with his wrestling. And I think now he's really, like, if you just look at the guys he's fought, it's like, you know, it's not, you know, and you've said this, and we've agreed on this, and on, you know, this is just a common belief with people who, you know, have their head on straight and are really seeing things for what they are. When you watch MMA, people might hate on the UFC and say that, you know, we only watch the UFC or this like that. But what you have to understand is that the UFC has truly the best fighters. They truly have the best fighters in MMA. This is a fact. And that is being shown with the results of this trade. And I'm not saying that Demetrius Johnson hasn't fought good guys that won championship. They have world-class fighters. I'm not saying they don't, but it's just that the way, you know, just looking at the way Ben Askren was able to dominate when he was over there, and then the way he, you know, the way he's kind of struggled now being in the UFC, how many people thought Damian Maya was done in his career? And then now, you know, earlier this morning, he just submitted a guy who had never been submitted in his career yet, and a guy who's, regardless of win or lose, still, you know, a very high level wrestler and is good at what he does. You know, he doesn't have every aspect of the game that he probably should have, but, you know, a lot of people thought Maya was done, but he just, you know, so that's the kind of thing where it's like, really look, and a lot of people thought, you know, Masvidal was just kind of like a more or less a gatekeeper fighter. Like, he was really a guy who was like pretty good, but really not good enough, you know, to hang with the top guys. Like, in his fights beforehand, you know, he was just, you know, Masvidal was fighting top guys, but he would come up short. He fought, you know, Stephen Thompson at Madison Square Garden, you know, a couple fights before his fight with Till, or whenever that was. I remember he fought there, and he was the guy who would fight top guys, but, you know, sometimes he'd win, sometimes he'd lose. Like, he fought Cerrone, and he wins, but he fought Wonder Boy, and he loses. Like, so, but then he has he shows a resurgence, so. That's just the thing, is that you can't count out UFC guys, and the UFC still has the best fighters. And I think that's just a big point to make here. And that's the reason why I said that. The reason why I'm going into all these facts here is that you asked why I had that stance when I said that, or how I feel about people saying that Ben Askren was done and things like that, or however they said it. And the reason why it frustrated me to see people, you know, coming at Ben Askren in that way, was because I'm just trying to point out that the guys he's fought are the best guys in the world. And people like to think that, oh, if he's the number 11 guy at welterweight in the UFC, like, oh, the number 11 is not that good because, you know, the best guys in the world are the top five guys. That's not true, because the number 11 guy could go over to Bellator and absolutely dominate in the division. He could probably be the champion. So, and the same thing with ONE Championship. Damian Maia could probably go into the Grand Prix over there, ONE Championship, if they did in his weight class, and he could probably win that Grand Prix with his skills. So that's the type of stuff that people don't want to say, is that the guys that Ben Askren has fought are still some of the best guys in the world. So, yes, he's not, you know, as elite as he was, you know, maybe originally sold to be, as the way it was sold to us, but he's still, it's to me disrespectful to say that he's done in his career because of the guys that he's lost to. These are still the best guys in the world. So that's my stance on it.
My thing, I'm gonna go to Ben Askren real quick, because we all know about Damian. We all know about Damian Maia. Okay, Ben Askren is a grappler. We know that. But your game plan shouldn't be to grapple with Damian Maia. To me, that game plan is just, that's a dumb game plan. Everybody knows the blueprint of beating Maia is to stuff takedowns and to make him try to become a striker. And Askren actually was landing some punches. So, you know, it was like, hey, man, you know, you might be able to land a takedown or two. I get it. But, you know, Maia is more comfortable on the mat than he is on his feet. So I kind of blame his game plan a little bit in that fight. I'm still not sold on Askren. I think if I was the UFC, would I want to do over? Probably. But, you know, we can't do that. We can't go back and be revisionist. But, you know, it's just, as a big fan of Demetrius Johnson, you know I am a big fan of Demetrius Johnson. It's just that I feel he should be in the UFC, and the UFC is where he belongs. He shouldn't be over there at ONE Championship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. You know, one thing somebody said, you know, there's a question that I have, you know, immediately responding to that, and is that, you know, first of all, some people, before I ask it, some people said earlier, some guy was making a point on Twitter, and he said that, you know, if you really look at, like, the trade, you know, if you really look at the trade, or if you're Ben Askren, it, like, the whole thing kind of seems like a complete bust, you know, if you're Ben Askren, because of the way your fights have gone and the results you've gotten in those three fights. But the guy said, if you're Dana White looking at that trade, it's not necessarily a bust, because regardless of Ben Askren's performance, Ben Askren's fights have led to other guys that he's fought rising to a level of stardom. Enter Jorge Masvidal with that 5-second knockout. Now he's, like, you know, one of the most talked about fighters in the UFC. So if you're Dana White, you might look at it like that. And then also they mentioned that if it weren't for the trade, someone also said that they thought, and this is why I wanted to wait for the question, because this part would lead into me asking you about what this person said. And they said that Demetrius Johnson would have won the trilogy if he had not been traded, which then you would not have had this Henry Cejudo that you have now, who has also gotten a lot of popularity in his last couple of fights post-trade. So my question to you following that is, do you think that regardless of, you know, what things panned out because of the trade and the whole Dana White thing, do you think that Demetrius Johnson, either A, if he didn't get traded, or B, being that he's fighting at 135 pounds now over in one championship, even though that's the flyweight limit is 135, so he's actually fighting what would be bantamweight in UFC, and a lot of people said that he, you know, was scared to move up and things like that to fight bigger guys, but now he is fighting bigger guys, and he won the flyweight Grand Prix at 135 pounds. So my question is that if he were to come back and challenge Cejudo for the 135 belt or the flyweight belt, whichever, or whatever, I don't even know how it would go, but if he would, do you think that he would beat Cejudo at 135 pounds?
I think he still fights at 125, 126. I think he normally weighs in around, he hasn't weighed in at 135, has always been under since he's been over there at one. So I still think he's probably still classified as a flyweight. I still think he beat Cejudo in the second fight. I still think that was a UFC. I think the UFC put the fix in on that fight. I think I've watched that fight at least two or three times, and I still don't see where Cejudo won three rounds. I still don't see where he won three rounds. So, you know, that being said, I think DJ, if he was to fight Cejudo again, I think he would finish. He wouldn't go in there looking to outpoint him, because he felt that he was robbed in that second fight. So he would go in with a different mindset, and he would go in to finish Cejudo, and I think he would do it probably in the second or the third round. I totally disagree with what Dana White said about Ben Askren making guys who fight bigger stars. Lawler was already a big star. Lawler was a previous champion. Lawler was coming off a knee injury when he fought Ben Askren. And a lot of people say that was a bogus stoppage. Some people say it was a good stoppage, either or. Then Masvidal, he had already a name for himself after what he did to Leon Edwards. But you could say, okay, what Masvidal did to finish Askren made him a bigger star than fighting Askren. It was what he did to Askren that made him a bigger star. And to me, Maya has always been an established fighter. You know, he's just one of those guys that he's boring to me. Damian Maya is a guy that Tom Woodley made him look so pedestrian when he couldn't take him down. If Maya can't take you down, then he looks like he shouldn't be in the octagon at times. So I'm not buying that he makes guys who fight bigger stars. And Dana White would never admit this, Keith, because I think the UFC, they just didn't like Demetrius Johnson. And what is there to not like about Demetrius Johnson? Me and you have talked about this many times. What is there not to like about a winner? Non-controversial, a winner. The guy, they could have did some stuff with him where they could have made some extra money as far as, like, you know, doing the Twitch thing, doing the video game thing. You know, they could have threw their arms into that, you know, see how that would have went. And it's just, they just never believed in him, man, and that's sad. But they believe in Ronda Rousey. They believe in Conor McGregor. They believe in Nate Diaz. They believe in now Ben Askren. I mean, it's like, come on, man. This guy, DJ, is proven. He is proven in and out of the octagon. Now they believe in Cejudo. It's like, come on, man. It's just crazy to me, but I get it. He was so dominant that his fights became people just went in there knowing that he was going to win. And maybe that led to his pay-per-views not being, you know, being really purchased at a high rate. But if you look at it, John Jones, his pay-per-views don't get good buys because what do we think going into the fight? What can this guy do to beat him? Can this guy really beat him? So people don't buy him. So I think it's kind of, you know, we'll see what happens with Askren down the road. I definitely disagree with what Dana White said about him making bigger stars out of the guys he fight. I definitely disagree with that. And I do believe DJ will win a trilogy fight against Cejudo, and I think he will finish him. And, you know, we'll see what pans out.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say Dana White said it. It was that a fan had suggested that if you're Dana White, you might think of it this way. But it wasn't, like, Dana White didn't come out and say that. I don't want to, like,
okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
A fan had said that to me, that if you're Dana White, you might see it this way. But Dana White didn't say it, so I don't want to get that screwed there. But,
Yeah. My bad. And if the fan said that, I disagree with the fan premise on that, because that makes no sense. Every guy that Askren has fought has basically is a top 10 guy. So them guys are already established. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No.
That gave Maya a challenge for the belt. Lawler was the champion. And Masvidal is the guy that beat Donald Cerrone in Denver. And I was at that fight. So he beat, didn't he go over to London and beat Darren Till?
I'm not sure where that fight was.
Yeah, but I think it was in Till's home. It was somewhere in his home. I think it was his home turf that he went over there.
Maybe Liverpool.
Till. Yeah, I think so. But at the same, but you know, Masvidal is a name people know. So I would disagree with the fan and they premise on that. I just don't think that's a logic based theory on that, Keys.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. You know, a lot of the things that are said, you know, like even that case right there, like, said that to me. I don't even really respond to people, to be honest. A lot of people tell me this stuff on Twitter. I don't even respond because it's like a lot of times conversations, like, I say something and then it gets taken away and then people are talking all day and it's like, I'm not, like, I don't always want to chime into things, especially when I'm like, this person's going to, like, argue this, and I don't care to argue it. So I didn't even respond to that, but I just read it and thought it was interesting. But I didn't know that the one championship, you can be under the weight, but then other guys can be 135 pounds. I thought that they had a fight at the same weight.
Nah, they bantamweight division goes up to 135.
Oh, that's different from the UFC, because you got to be.
Yeah.
UFC is like, you got to be, you can be like 1 pound over or 1 pound under, but you have to be, like, it's pretty much between 134 and 136 if you're going to be, right? Because can you weigh in at 134? Can you be, 134 pounds? Did you miss weight if you're 135?
Yeah, because, I mean, actually, you remember somebody was struggling to make weight. They said they were struggling to make weight. And they actually came in 2 pounds under the championship weight limit. I can't remember who it was, but they came in 2 pounds under the – actually, it was Kevin Gastelum when he fought Israel Adesanya. They said he was struggling to make weight, and then he actually came in 2 pounds under the 185. He actually came in at 183.
You know what? That what you just said right there actually brings up something that Now, this topic is a little bit dated because today, I think it's, you know, we're almost through October now. Like, it's over, you know, but we're wrapping that up. But this was a couple weeks ago. This is a bit dated, but I haven't got to the chance to talk with you since it happened. And we also, you know, haven't had a show either. But I definitely got to get your take on this fight. Now, I know you watched the Whitaker and Adesanya fight.
Yes.
So, you know, when I was watching that fight, you know, I watched the fights before. You know, I watched I started watching it the last fight on the prelims, or maybe the first fight on the main card was when I was able to start watching it. But you know, I saw the Tai Tuivasa lost. It seemed like a lot of the Australian fighters, a good handful of Australian fighters, lost that night. Oh, the other kid who's a light heavyweight, he lost, and he's an Aussie too. It seemed like all the Australian fighters lost that night. It was kind of disappointing to see that. I can't forget the kid's name. He was pretty good. He's an upcoming light heavyweight fighter. Jim Crute. There we go. So the kid Jim Crute, he lost, I'm pretty sure. And I think he was on that card, or maybe that was a different card, but I don't know. It seemed like all the Australian fighters lost that night, including Whitaker. And when I was watching the Whitaker Adesanya fight, it was actually really annoying because I had a good friend of mine and his friend, kind of like a third party friend kind of thing, was like, we were having some beers and watching the fight. And now these two guys, like, I don't bet on anything anymore. So I don't even make predictions for fights anymore, unless me and you make predictions. But if I'm out with friends or anything and they ask me who I think is going to win, I just say, I don't know, because honestly, the UFC is the best fighters in the world and it's very unpredictable. Really, anything can happen in any fight. Anybody can lose any day. So it really doesn't. You know, it's really no point to, like, for me to try to predict a fight, you know, because there's especially one like that, where you've had Whitaker and Adesanya was, like, two really good guys. You know, that was a tough fight to pick, even though in my heart I wanted to see Whitaker win, but I really didn't know. So I didn't predict it. But they knew that I, you know, they said, but who do you want to win? And I said, I want Whitaker to win. Of course, they had to bust my balls about everything they deemed a mistake, you know, in Whitaker's fighting style, the way he was fighting Adesanya, you know, in their striking exchanges. Of course, they had to bust my balls for every little thing, and that was annoying. So I really couldn't get to enjoy the fight the way I wanted to, but I did see, you know, some things that Whitaker was doing. I mean, I'm not a professional. I'm just a fan. So it's kind of bogus for me to be judging Whitaker's striking. You know, he could knock me out. Yeah, like, you know, he could knock me out in a second, you know. Like, who am I to judge his boxing, right? But just the one thing that I didn't understand about Whitaker was it seemed to me like he was chasing Adesanya, and he was like, it looked like he was going for the KO very early, and that's, I don't usually see that from Whitaker. Usually, like, in the Romero fights, like, he was standing with him, but he wasn't really on the chase like that, you know, and through that, he was able to, I don't know, because that will get me into a whole new spiel. So just let me, what did you think about the fight?
I'm trying to find the conversation that we had during that fight, because I said at the end of the first round, I said, Whitaker is throwing wide and wild, leaving himself open to get caught. And in the second round, throwing wild and wide, he got caught. And I just felt like he was too emotionally charged for the fight. With Adesanya, even when Adesanya walk-in, I was sitting up here like, this dude is actually dancing on the walk-in. I was like, what the hell is this? Then lo and behold, you know, that side of Robert Whitaker, I've never seen him fight like that before. And I bet when he goes back and he watched the tape, he probably agrees that, damn, man, what was I doing? He wasn't setting anything up. He wasn't fainting. He wasn't doing anything to make Izzy think in there. And he got finished, man. It was a shocking win, needless to say. Because I thought Whitaker would win. But at the same time, Whitaker ain't fought in forever and a day. And Izzy has been one of the most active fighters in the UFC. So, in a way, I know me and you don't really like to, we really don't like to do this, but I think ring rust actually did play a part in the outcome, because you could just tell Izzy was calm, he was collective, he stuck to what he do, and my man Rob, man, he just didn't look like himself. He looked way too anxious, too jacked up. And he paid for it.
And do you think that Adesanya got in his head during the build up to that fight?
I wanna say no. But by the way Whitaker was fighting, I would say yes, because we never seen him fight that wild before. We never seen him. He was actually, like you said, chasing Izzy around the octagon instead of fighting him. So I would say yes. Izzy may have won a bit of mental warfare against Robert Whitaker. And actually, I said this. I found it. It was at 10:29 p.m. I said, Whitaker is too wide and wild with his punches, leading to the knockdown and a 10-9 round for Izzy. And lo and behold, he got knocked out.
And you usually do pretty good with predicting these things. So if we do talk about it during the fight and you do make a comment about something, usually most of the times when the thing that you said does either tend to happen afterwards or it plays out very similar to what you said. So that wasn't surprising that he did get caught after you had said that.
Yeah. Now we got to see what's next for Izzy. I think it's Paulo Costa. I want to see what type of fight Izzy is going to incorporate against Costa, because Costa is heavy-handed. I mean, Whitaker is heavy-handed also, but I think Costa is more so than Whitaker. I think going into the Robert Whitaker fight, I said Izzy needs to be more of a John Jones-type fighter, use his range, use his kicks to keep Whitaker at distance. And I think going into the Paulo Costa fight, he needs to do the same thing. Keep Paulo at distance, use your kicks, use your jab, and don't let Paulo close the space. I think if Paulo closes the space, Izzy could be in trouble like he was against Gaston.
Yeah, I'm definitely I'm excited to see Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa. That's gonna be a good one. I actually hope that they get that together either January. I would hope honestly for January, to be honest. But if not that, February. I mean, how much time? I don't think Israel really took literally any damage in his fight with Whitaker. I really didn't. I mean, he probably got caught a couple times, but I don't think he took any serious damage. And I mean, I know Costa probably needs some time off, but I think he'll be good by that point, because his fight with Romero was in, August? So I think he'll have had the necessary time off by then. And you've seen Adesanya, you know, taking shots at Costa after the fight. He actually gave him a, he did like a very similar move I used to see DX do in WWE. He did that to him from the octagon. I was like, damn, is he watches wrestling then?
Yeah, he did that. He did do that.
And nobody pointed that out that he did that. And I wrote that in my article. I was like, Izzy taunted Costa with a DX-esque move from the octagon. Nobody even pointed that out. None of the announcers said it. I was really surprised because you know how UFC, you know, loves to mention WWE and, you know, vice versa. They love to be enter into each other's universes whenever they can. So I'm really surprised that they didn't. None of the commentary mentioned that or on the post-fight show or anything. Nobody mentioned it. If they did, I missed it, but I didn't hear it. I thought they would have because –
but you know,
no, I think. Well,
but you know,
I
think.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. But I think one thing UFC is trying to do, but I think is a wrong move for them. They trying to like not embrace WWE, whereas I think they should, because then you are incorporating a whole new fan base into your sport. It ain't like most wrestling fans don't know who UFC people are anyway. You know, we got Ronda Rousey, we got Travis Brown, you know, her husband, you know, they doing the show. Conor McGregor has talked about doing WWE. Now Cain Velasquez in WWE. DC has talked about doing WWE. Brock Lesnar is in WWE. So I don't know why the announcers wouldn't say anything about that, because it would have been like a good crossover like comment. But I don't know. But you know, speaking of Conor had a press conference in Russia this week, and he announced that January 18th he's coming back. I know you are the president of the Conor McGregor and T. Woods fan clubs. So, what were your thoughts on the Conor McGregor press conference?
Man, the T. Woods fan club is still up and running, man. It's going strong, and you know the committee is putting forth new types of effort to push that club forward. And T. Woods will be back. I think he should fight Leon Edwards. That's who I want to see him fight. But anyways,
I don't think he'll take that fight, Keys.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you don't have to take it, but that would be who I would like to see him fight. If not that, let's see him fight RDA. Those are the two fights. But
I think he would take the RDA fight over the Edwards fight. I think he would take RDA over Edwards. I think Edwards is probably a little bit more dangerous of a fight, whereas I think RDA is the more safer of the two fights. But go ahead.
But I think RDA is a bit more, in my opinion, a bit more well-rounded than Edwards is in terms of, you know, his game. Where Edwards, you know, at least for what I've seen, I've really only seen really Edwards as a striker. I never seen too much of his work on the mat, but then again, I really haven't seen, honestly, that many Leon Edwards fights, but I've seen RDA, you know, put in plenty of work on the mat. So I just thought RDA more well-rounded, but either that or them two guys or Santiago Ponzinibbio. I would like to see Woodley fight Ponzinibbio too. So maybe they can get that fight going if he's healthy again. I know he fell out of the Lawler fight, so something happened to him, but I don't want to see Woodley fight Lawler again, to be honest. I want to see him fight one of the guys he hasn't fought, so that'd be cool. But, you know, you see your question. What was your question about Conor?
What did you think about the Conor's press conference and him returning January 18th?
So I didn't see it live because the time frame was like all weird, and like I wasn't gonna wake up like at like 5 a.m. to like watch a McGregor press conference, even though like you might think that's something that I would do. I really wouldn't, because like I'm not even waking up at 5 a.m. to watch a UFC card. Like that's just too early for me to really wake up from, unless like I'm gonna go to work. Like that's too early for me to wake up for something. So, but what I thought of it was that it was cool. I didn't expect him to announce anything about his fight. I really didn't think the press conference was going to be about that. I really thought it was just going to be a promotional thing where he was, you know, talking about the Proper 12 is in Russia now or whatever. It was just really going to be a promotional tour thing for Proper 12 and answer fan questions or something like that. But I really didn't think he was going to announce, he didn't really make a fight announcement, but to even release that there's a date for his return set. So I didn't even think that would happen at all. But, I mean, I'm excited about that. You know, I'm really excited about that. And I don't know if he said it or who said it, but, you know, somebody threw out someone threw out Cowboy Cerrone and Justin Gaethje. I don't know if he said that those were two guys that were possible or who said those two names and that came into the conversation, but somebody said those two names and as his possible opponents. And then I guess, a buddy of mine had sent me a picture of, I guess Cerrone had posted a picture on Twitter or somewhere of a Budweiser next to a bottle of Proper 12. And that was like after that announcement at some point. So I don't know, maybe he's fighting Cerrone. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm excited about the announcement, but I would like to know who he's fighting. I hope it's Gaethje.
He said he didn't want to announce the guy he was fighting because he didn't want the UFC to flip it. So me, I tweeted that I was like, silly me, I guess. Why would the UFC flip it? Makes no sense. Makes no sense. Conor is one of the biggest draws. Why sabotage the money? My thoughts are the UFC has no idea about this January 18th fight, and this is MO to try to hijack headlines prior to big fights. I hope I'm wrong this time. Then I came back a little bit later, and I said, hot take and most likely unpopular. I said, the UFC is going to protect Conor, so the best way to do that is put him in a winnable fight. They understand he's a draw, but he is a bigger draw when he's winning. I'm not a fan of the guy, but I understand the business. Cowboy is a better fight for him. So my thing is, I think the UFC will protect him in his next fight. They will put him in there against a guy that I would say should be a winnable fight for Conor. I don't think it'll be Gaethje because I think Gaethje is a dangerous fight for Conor. And I am backtracking on what my original stance was on Gaethje because Gaethje has actually – he's been starching guys, man. The guy goes in there, and he is looking to get the fight over with as fast as possible. My original stance on Conor versus Gaethje is I felt Conor would beat him because Gaethje is a guy that's going to stand there and trade with you. And that's what Conor wants you to do. Conor wants you to stand in front of him. He don't want to have to defend takedowns. He don't want to have to check leg kicks. Conor wants to just stand there, and he wants to punch you. So when you originally brought up Gaethje, I was totally against it. But I don't think they will put him in there with Gaethje at this time because of what Gaethje is doing to these guys, man. I think they would rather put him in there with Cerrone because Cerrone is – you know, he's a name, and I think he's a guy that they feel they can protect Conor with in the Octagon. So And I think him fighting Cerrone is more winnable than him fighting Gaethje.
Yeah, because I remember when I had mentioned that, you know, I remember the day that it was. It was the day after the, you know, Conor lost to Khabib, and then we did a show, I'm pretty sure, the day after that on that Sunday or on that Monday. It was either a day or two after the fight, and I had come on here, and I think you asked me who would you want to see Conor fight next or see him go from here, et cetera, and I said I want to see him fight Justin Gaethje, and at that time you said that I wanted him to fight him because I felt like that was a winnable fight, not because it would be a challenge. And I just thought that I always just thought it was an intriguing fight because of the striking aspect of it. And like a lot of us have been saying lately too, which I don't think is as prominent as we're making it seem, is that Justin Gaethje has a wrestling background. And apparently he was like a NCAA All-American and used to wrestle a lot, and now he just like doesn't wrestle anymore in his MMA fights. And a lot of us have been using that as a, not including me. I don't think you've said this either, but I've read a lot of articles and seen a lot of people on Twitter arguing that, you know, Justin Gaethje would be a tough fight for Khabib because of Gaethje's wrestling background, which I don't think Gaethje is necessarily a tough fight for Khabib. I mean, I think he could stop Khabib maybe, but it's like I think he's really would be relying on a knockout, and how likely is it for someone to knock out Khabib? Not very likely, if we're being honest. So if he's going to pull some magic tricks out of the hat and start wrestling, then you guys may, you know, go with that if you think that's going to happen. But, I mean, if he's going to wrestle, let's see some wrestling. I mean, I think if he was that good of a wrestler, he would do it, and he wouldn't be, you know, putting himself out there to take unnecessary shots like he's done in his recent fights. So I don't really understand that. But, you know, in that regard, that would make Gaethje even more of a dangerous fight for Conor if he does have this so-called, you know, big wrestling background that everybody says that he has. And that would make even, you know, that there would say Cowboy even more, like, as for someone to him to fight. That would make even more sense as to why they would have him fight Cowboy. So you wouldn't have, you know, somebody who's going to take him down. But then at the same time, Cowboy takes guys down too. So, and Cowboy has a ground game. So that was another reason why I felt like the Cowboy fight really wasn't. I mean, I guess it's a winnable fight, but at the same time, like, I've heard people say it's like almost like a tune-up fight for Conor. And I mean, I wouldn't say it's a tune-up fight. I mean, Cowboy is not—he's not a pushover. I mean, McGregor's been beat by submission many times, and Cowboy could submit him also. So I don't know why people would, you know, making it seem that it would just be this crazy easy fight. I mean, I know Cowboy's not the most dangerous guy he could fight, but I wouldn't say he's an easy fight.
Yeah, I think the UFC would definitely put him in with Cerrone prior to Gaethje. I think Conor said he wanted to fight three times this year. He said he's going to fight January 18th. And then he wants to fight the winner of Masvidal versus Nate. And then he wants to fight Khabib. My thing is, he wants to fight the winner of the Khabib, Tony Ferguson. So, my thing is, I don't think him fighting Nate or Masvidal at 170 is a smart move. If I was advising him, I would stay against that fight. I would change that fight to maybe a second fight with Jose Aldo at 155, but Aldo just moved down to 135, so I don't understand that move at all. So, but there are fights out there for Conor, so we'll see how things work out. I was shocked that he threw a date out there of his next fight. He threw out January 18th. Now, I think that's the first card of 2020. Maybe the first card, maybe the second card.
That could be the first card. Yeah, because I know when they, because I remember it was January 19th when they had, I want to say it was the 19th or the 20th when they had the first card of the year, which was, and I remember that it was the Dillashaw Cejudo card, and that was on January 19th, I believe. That was the first of the year.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked that he would throw a date out there, and he wouldn't name the opponent. So it makes me kind of leery, because I don't see why the UFC wouldn't announce who his opponent would be, why they wouldn't be advertising it, you know, why they wouldn't be marketing it. So the return of Conor McGregor, la, 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 you know. So that just leads me to think that the UFC is more in the dark than we are.
No, that could very well be. I mean, another, you know, because like you said, for the like the promotion of it, the promotional aspect is like, why wouldn't they want to announce a fight with a guy, you know, sooner? Where it's like, if you put this out sooner, like you can promote it for longer, and he's also a big name. Like you don't need to, like, why wait till the last, you know, 4 weeks before the fight to tell the people he's coming back? You should want people to know sooner, and you can, you know, start making money on the investment. So, you know, it's surprising that they would hold back. I mean, if, you know, as for when you mentioned how Conor said that, like usually when if he tells the fight that the UFC will flip it, I think what he meant by that was that, I mean, you have a good point about that. When he said they were going to flip it, I think he didn't say who his opponent was because he knows that it's not really on and the UFC doesn't even have a fight for him, and he's saying that to make the headline. That I can understand that, but at the same time is also, if he was saying he doesn't want to say the opponent because they'll flip it, I think what he means is that there has been many times where big fights were quote-unquote in the dark, like they were official, but they just weren't officially announced, and they got leaked, or like somebody announced it somewhere, and you know, rumors got around about the fight, and then before the UFC was able to announce it, and then once it came to the press conference, a lot of the media end up asking Dana White about the fight because, you know, the grapevine, it moves to the grapevine, and reporters start hearing about it, you know, before Dana White can announce it. And there's been many, many press conferences where reporters have asked Dana White, you know, that, you know, they had mentioned that they heard about that fight possibly being made, and Dana White had said no, that there was, that fight was not on the table. But then you find out later that the fight actually was on the table. So there's been many instances of that, and that kind of thing makes me think that, it makes me think that, you know, that could be the scenario that the Conor was referring to when he says they'll try to flip it, was that if he would announce it, then Dana White would not like that he didn't allow him to announce the fight. Cause you know, UFC wants to be the first ones to break the fight, not have other people breaking it before them. So if that was it, I would think that was what he meant by it.
Okay. That kind of sort of makes sense. But, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I want to say we're in October now. We're not even at Thanksgiving yet, so we're still quite a ways from January 18th. So a lot can happen between now and then. But let's talk about the biggest news of the weekend, Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz posted on Instagram that he was out of UFC 244. I want to say that was Wednesday. And then Thursday, you know, it was more news swirling around about Leon Edwards possibly being his replacement. And then I want to say late yesterday, comes out that Nate will fight and he will not be suspended because it's been proven that I guess something that he ate was contaminated. So the fight between him and Masvidal is going to happen. So what is your opinion on this whole Nate Diaz thing? Situation.
Yeah, so what I'm confused about with that situation is that, like, when I was reading the reports about it, like, I don't always understand, like, the whole, like, USADA coming out with, like, you know, this, and then USADA comes out and, like, says that, and then this, like, you know, I don't really understand, like, because it's like it changes. Like, you know, the reports always change a little bit, and then they say this. So, like, I get too confused with what they're trying to say sometimes. So, like, I just usually wait for Bokumoto to tweet out, you know, what's going on, and I'll just check it when he tweets it. Usually he comes out more with a more concise statement on what's going on, or help Ariel Helwani usually says like a more concise statement. So, but when I did read what they said, is that it sounded like that they, you know, they said something that he took had been traced back to like a multivitamin, something like that, and you know he'd been cleared of charges, he can fight. And then, you know, I saw Josh Barnett. He tweeted and he said like, oh, if they can like do this with Diaz, like I'm glad that they cleared his name and all this, but does that mean that USADA can give me 18 months back out of my career and let me take them to court, you know, allow me basically to get the same treatment that Diaz just got, like in terms of him kind of more or less getting off extremely easy compared to so many other athletes who, if they were in the same situation, they'd be taken off the card indefinitely and they wouldn't get, you know, that kind of good treatment where it's like, okay, we figured this out in literally like 2 days and we're going to let you fight and make your money. You know, as where a lot of the fighters would not have even like gotten their fight purse and you know, they'd be suspended for a long period of time, really like damage their career. So when he said that, that really made me think about it. And now it's like, now my opinion has kind of been swayed to that, is USADA like going by favoritism with these fighters, and certain people are just, they're just allowing them, certain people that like draws, people who are draws for the UFC, they're allowing, giving them a pass on, you know, tampered supplements, but then fighters who really aren't as popular are having to, you know, go the long way, and they're really dragging them through the mud to get their careers back on track. So, you know, that's kind of where my opinion has been swayed to, you know, in the past couple of hours, and I'm kind of a little bit disgusted, honestly. Kind of disgusted.
I think Nate put a lot of pressure on them when he came out and said, "This some bullshit. I'm gonna clear my name." He didn't let USADA dictate the narrative. He dictated the narrative by jumping out there first. Because normally we don't hear about this stuff till after a fight. You know, they'll say, yeah, he tested positive, blah, 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 blah. So with Nate jumping out there, I think kind of made USADA become proactive instead of reactive. And, you know, and I kind of agree with Josh Barnett. If you can have such a fast determination on Nate, why can't we have a fast determination on other fighters? Why can't we have quicker solutions to other fighters? You know, instead of letting them fight, then, you know, you come out after the fight so and so tested positive for this. The fight will be considered a no contest. La 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 la. Yeah, I kind of agree with Josh Barnett on that one, man. I wonder why they were so quick with Nate and be dragging their feet with other fighters.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at with that now. Is it's just kind of messed up. Like, you know, how come it's the investigation can be done so quick and you can determine so fast that, you know, certain fighters were actually, you know, given a contaminated supplement and they're actually innocent when, you know, it takes other fighters, you know, for example, who was the one who just had the, she won the flyweight belt and then she had to, she got stripped of the belt. I forget her name off the top of my head, but she was the one who won the tournament to win the belt. And then
Nico.
She, I think it was, yeah, right, her. So I'm pretty sure that's what happened with her, is that she got banned, but then I'm pretty sure they, she got banned.
They said, then they came back and said she had a tainted supplement, because her and Sean O'Malley was in the same group. They said they all had a tainted supplement. And,
but
you know,
it took
them
a while to come to that, though. It took them months to come to that conclusion.
I think it was 8 months.
Cause I remember when she, it took them, that's a long time. So they came back and revoked their sentences, but it took them months and months to come to that conclusion, whereas Nate Diaz took them literally like 48 hours for them to figure that out. And it's just like, it's not fair when you think about it that way, because you're taking time away from their careers and taking food off their children's plates, you know what I'm saying? Because that's their job. So, and I'm sure they have to, I'm sure they lose out in a lot of areas too that we don't know about when they're going through the struggle or have to go to court or whatever, or pay for testing or whatever they have to do. So I'm sure there's other factors that I'm not aware about that they have to go through because of the struggles with USADA. But and then another case that's like that is, I think it was Amanda Ribas, or Amanda Ribas. She just beat Mackenzie Dern by a decision, I'm pretty sure. And I love Amanda Ribas. Like, I remember I did an article on her like a while back, and I actually had to, I'm pretty sure it was her, and I did an article on her a while back when she was making her return fight, and I happened to like go and, you know, I couldn't help but come across that like she hadn't fought in years and years, and then I found out that was because she got banned for like a, I'm pretty sure she got a sentence. And then they revoked it, but it took them years to figure that out. Like, she got banned and was inactive for, I believe, 3 years until they figured out that she actually had a contaminated supplement. And then that's when, because I think she was given a 5-year sentence. And then
wow.
So she did 3 years. Yeah, I think it was 5 years, because all the suspensions are different. Like, even look, and I did like, I've done a lot of research on like Nick Diaz's suspensions too. And a lot of the stuff he was suspended for is complete bogus if you compare it to what they're suspended for now. Cause if you really look into it, Nick Diaz was suspended for marijuana, and he was suspended for, he had long sentences for marijuana. Like,
I think he got three weeks.
Yeah, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't know. When you think about Nick Diaz hasn't fought in a while. It's like, this guy was suspended for most of the time that he hasn't been fighting. So if he's not fighting now, it may be by choice. But for many of these years where you're saying he hasn't fought, people don't know he's been suspended because of the smoke of marijuana. And, like, how much of a joke does that really seem like now? Because, you know, all sorts of fighters are taking CBD and stuff like this, and it's getting more and more prominent in the industry, and you've got recreational marijuana and stuff like that. And I don't even know if marijuana is even – I'm pretty sure it's still a banned substance, but I know you won't get the same sentence that Nick Diaz got back then. I don't think it would be a huge deal if you had marijuana now. I don't know what the sentence is. I don't think it's that much, though. But still, Amanda Ribas, I'm pretty sure she had 5 years, And then I think she did 3 years out of it. And then once it came to the 3 years, they ended up figuring they revoked. I'm pretty sure they revoked her case. And then that's when she was able to just make a return. Not the Mackenzie Dern fight. It was before that. The Dern fight was her second fight back. But she won her fight back, and then she just won again.
For her to get 5 years, it couldn't have been a first offense, man. It couldn't have been a first offense for her to get 5 years off the bat. Because remember, I want to say the first time John Jones got popped, he got, what, 2 years? And then the second time he got, what, a year and a half or another 2 years or something? And then, the second time they said he could have got up to 5 years on the second one. So maybe that wasn't her first time. I think, man, you might have to go back and take a look at her case. But I don't see them giving somebody 5 years off their first offense.
Okay. So I just looked it up right now. I was incorrect with the years. But the story that I was saying was actually true. It was just that my number was off. So
okay.
USADA, so I'm looking at MMA Junkie now, and the headline says, USADA ends UFC strawweight Amanda Ribas 2-year suspension for Osterine, which I believe is the same substance that right. So
yep.
I'm pretty sure that was the same substance that they were banned for. So that she might have been part of that same revoked statement when they were all able to come back. And so this is what happened. So it said the anti-doping agency has abruptly ended UFC strawweight Amanda Ribas 2-year suspension. USADA said new tests detected trace levels of Osterine that convinced the agency a positive drug test was likely the result of a contaminated supplement. So she had did – I want to know how much of her time she had did. Okay, so it said she failed an out-of-competition test conducted on June 7th, 2017. And then it says the banned substance showed up, but she was unable to find the source of the positive test and accepted a 2-year suspension in January 2018. And I know she just came back this year. So she was out for at least a year, because I know she came back. I want to say it was during the spring of this year. So she accepted the suspension in January 2018, so she did at least 1 year, probably a year and change out of her 2-year sentence before they found out. So back to what we were saying is that for Nate Diaz, it took him about 48 hours, maybe give or take. But for someone like Amanda Ribas, you know, she had a 2-year suspension, but she had to serve a year and change out of it before they were able to figure out that it was likely due to a contaminated supplement. She's innocent. So that was the point I was trying to make. My numbers were off, but my basis was right of what happened.
Yeah, I ain't gonna say shady. I don't want to use the word shady. I find it kind of interesting that Nate took less than 2 days and other people take months. It was like, so y'all could actually go back that quick to find out that what he took, you know, what he ate, what he ingested was contaminated that fast. So I think that's kind of interesting. I don't want to use the word shady, but shady is the word that's kind of like at the top of my head right now. I'm kind of glad that the fight isn't being canceled, because I don't think there was another fight on that card that was really worthy of being a main event level fight. So good for Nate, he gets the fight. Good for Jorge, he gets the fight. Good for the USC. But I just hope nothing comes down the pipe afterwards saying that, you know, you saw the rush this and he did Indeed, you know, use this or something like that, because then it'll just make us look at you sliders more sideways than we already do. But, you know, we kind of went over tonight. I wanted one more thing to talk about. You know what? Fuck it. We're already over. We'll make this quick. Paige VanZant tweeted earlier, well, on Instagram earlier this week, that she will fight, you know, anybody, you know, in the 115 or 125 division. And we all know Macy Barber has been clamoring for a fight against PVZ. And Paige did a lot of name dropping, but she failed to, she didn't say Macy's name. Macy then came on Ariel Helwani's show to kind of like talk trash about Paige VanZant. And Paige VanZant manager came out and said that Paige is interested in fighting Macy because Macy has no respect. Me, personally, I think Macy should be looking to fight somebody in the top 10, maybe top 5, if she her quest is to be the youngest UFC champion in history. A Paige VanZant fight does nothing for that chase. Only thing a Paige VanZant fight does for her is maybe make her a little bit more popular. A loss to Paige VanZant knocks you further out of the championship picture. So I don't understand why Macy is so hard-pressed to fight Paige. Paige isn't hard-pressed to fight her. So move your attention to somebody in the top 10, top 7, top 5. So what was your thoughts on that Macy, Paige VanZant social media drama?
Yeah, so I thought the same thing as you, basically, is that I don't really understand why Macy Barber, and I'm a fan of her, but I'm just not understanding why she's been chasing after a Paige VanZant fight. The only time that I really understood it was when she was just making her debut in the UFC, and I think she had called out Paige VanZant, like, earlier on, like, around that time, or maybe, like, after her first fight, I think she might have, like, called her out. It was earlier on. I mean, now she's a couple fights in and a couple wins in, you know what I mean? So I don't understand it, and I'm pretty sure she's ranked in the division, and I'm also pretty sure she's ranked higher than Paige VanZant, so I mean, I understood it when she was first coming in because, like, just start calling people out, especially someone, Paige VanZant has a good reputation, call it someone like that. But now that you're higher ranked than her, I really just don't understand what would be the goal in fighting her. Like, you should be chasing after people that are higher ranked than you, not people that are lower ranked than you. So, and that might even be a step down in competition for Macy Barber. I mean, she's looked really good. You know, Paige VanZant's kind of had, like, an up-and-down career. Like, she'll win one, lose one kind of thing. So, Macy Barber's still undefeated in her career. I mean, I think she should go after bigger fish. I mean, I'm a fan of Paige VanZant. I know a lot of people aren't, and that's okay. But I'm a fan of her even as a fighter. And I just don't think that they're really on the same path right now. I feel like Paige has different fights she wants to get done, and Macy Barber should be looking at other fights besides Paige because she's undefeated and she should be going after higher-ranked opponents. I just don't understand the call-out.
Yeah, because currently Paige VanZant is ranked 15th. Macy Barber is ranked 10th. I suggested that Macy Barber should fight Roxanne Modafferi or she should look to fight Jennifer Maia. Maia is ranked 5, Modafferi is ranked 8. So my thing is, why are you fighting down if you're striving to be the champion? That Paige VanZant fight doesn't move you up in the standards. And if you lose, you actually might end up trading places with her. You might move down to 15 and she might jump up to 10. So, you know, we've seen that happen before where the guy or girl fights somebody and the lower ranking person beats that person and they end up switching. I think that happened with my boy Corey Sandhagen. He fought somebody and they end up switching positions. I want to say Corey was 12 or 11 at the time of the fight, and the guy that he fought was either 8th or 9th, and they end up switching positions. I don't understand Macy's barber. I just don't understand this. It's just like what you posed to me earlier. Why is Maya and Pettis calling out Diego Sanchez when if you're trying to win a championship, you should be calling out guys that actually get you in the championship picture with a fight? I just don't understand it.
Yeah, that I don't know, because it's Diego Sanchez. I mean, Pettis, you had like arguably, you know, he's had big fights. Pettis has fought a lot of like big names, I think. But you know, Nate Diaz arguably the biggest fight of his career, and now you lose that and you want to fight Diego Sanchez. I just don't understand what was the goal with that. And then, two is Damian Maya. I mean, I also heard that Damian Maya is only going to do like a couple more fights, and I think he was going to retire. I thought I had heard that. So I guess he only has like two. I thought I heard two more fights. I don't know if they meant two more fights on his contract or two more fights until he's going to retire or what his plan is. I mean, I know he's up there in age, so it's understandable for him to retire. He's been fighting forever, but maybe he wants an easy couple of wins to like ride off into the sunset. But I mean, you just fought like a guy who is considered like high level by a lot of people. Like, why not fight other guys who are considered high level? I mean, you don't have to like rematch like Kobe Covington or like other people that you've had like issues beating, but you know, he could fight, you know, Ponzinibbio, or he could fight Robbie Lawler. You could fill in to fight Robbie Lawler. I'm pretty sure he needs an opponent. So I don't know. I mean, fight dudes that, I mean, this guy is like one of the best guys like in the world. Like, I don't understand why you call out Diego Sanchez, but that's just crazy to me.
Yeah, man. I was at the point where I felt that Diego Sanchez probably should be, forced to retire. You know, because, you know, he's taking a lot of shots, man. He's been in there and had a lot of wars. So, I don't understand guys calling him out, but, you know, it's their prerogative. So, I would have rather Damian Maya call out somebody else. I would have rather Pettis call off somebody else. But, you know, those guys, when they do they call offs, you know, sometimes it's strategic, sometimes it's not. So, but look, man, we had a good show tonight. We covered a lot of stuff. We talked about Nate Diaz. We talked about Conor McGregor. We talked about Damian Maia versus Ben Askren. We talked about Macy Barber and Paige VanZant. We talked about a lot tonight, you know, on our pop-up show.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Last words, Keith.
I was just really happy to be able to get on here tonight. You know, I know I hadn't been able to get on and do a show in a bit of time, so I was happy to just be on tonight, and you know, that's pretty much it. You know, everybody just do your best every day. You know, that's really all I got. I've been just trying to do bad. Just be the best person you could be every day. That'd be my last message.
Normally we do a dedication of all shows. You know, we really haven't done them here a lot lately. But I'm going to dedicate today's show to my grandson, Hayden. Today he had his very first basketball game. Their team needs a lot of work. I'm probably going to go out. I said I wouldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. But I think I'm going to go out and help the coach out to get the kids up to par. And I want to give a shout-out to my grandson, Hayden. Shout-out to the Scrap. You know, me and my man Keys, we write for them. And as always, live, love, laugh. Live your life the best you can. Tell somebody every day that you love them. And every day you should have at least one good laugh. And in closing, like always, Lee and Key signing out. Peace.